Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you again to the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Brent Topp, Chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University, and I'm your host for this program, Past Impressions, where we study the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the people, places, events, and key issues associated with that history. I'm honored today to have with us Dr. Kenneth Godfrey, a longtime historian of the church. Ken is very well known in his excellent history and involvement in understanding Mormon history, past president of the Mormon History Association. For 37 years served in the church educational system as an area director of seminaries and institutes, and also as the director of the Institute at Logan at the Utah State University. And so, Ken, we're grateful to have you with us on the program.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Ken, as we talk today, we've been talking about Nauvoo, and we've talked about the settling of Nauvoo and some of the things that were going on in Nauvoo and the development, and we have identified the time of peace and prosperity and many of the great things that took place there. Today we're going to talk a little bit about how that idyllic setting starts to crumble a little bit and some of the conflicts that come from within and from without, Mormons, non-Mormons. And so what would you say were the factors that brought about the strife and the conflict there in Hancock County?
Well, the conflict was, in a sense, ready to happen when the Latter-day Saints moved to Nauvoo. They happened to arrive in Nauvoo in 1839 at a time when the political situation in Illinois was kind of at a stalemate. The Whigs and the Democratic Party were about equally matched in Nauvoo, in Illinois, and with the coming of the Latter-day Saints, this brought a large block of electors, voters, and both of the parties began to vie for these voters and for their allegiance. There was a little hitch very early in the Nauvoo's settlement in that Lyman White, a member of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, identified the Democratic Party as being responsible for all of the Missouri problems the Latter-day Saints had had. Joseph Smith made a public statement that the Missouri experiences were deeper than politics, and he didn't want any political party identified as being the one that was responsible for their difficulties in Missouri. But then the prophet takes his journey to Washington, D.C., has a personal encounter with President Martin Van Buren, who was a Democrat. When he returned to Nauvoo, he did not particularly endorse the Democratic Party because of that experience, but he advised the Saints to get involved in politics and to be sure to vote. So in the election of 1840, most of the candidates that were friendly to the Latter-day Saints or were Latter-day Saints were elected to office. As a result of that, in 1841, Thomas C. Sharp and others in Hancock County who were not Latter-day Saints organized the Anti-Mormon Party. At first, this party was purely a political party. And they were just trying to unite a set of candidates that would be unfriendly to the Latter-day Saints. And they did win a few offices in 1841. Then in 1842, Thomas C. Sharp resigned as editor of the Warsaw Signal, and Thomas Gregg came as the editor. And Gregg was not as politically involved and was not as much a Mormon hater as Sharp was, And so the Warsaw Signal and the Anti-Mormon Party had very little influence in the election of 1842. But there was all of the candidates elected, including the governor of the state, was known for being friendly to the Latter-day Saints. And this further frightened the other citizens of Hancock County. And so they reorganized again in 1843, the Anti-Mormon Party, and it took on an edge that was more against the church than just political involvement. Then when Joseph Smith announced his candidacy for the presidency of the United States in 1844, this further aggravated the Anti-Mormon Party, and they became even more active in the electoral process. And so you can argue that politics played a role in the rise of anti-Mormonism in the state of Illinois, and so that becomes one cause. Involved in that is the passage by the legislature of the Nauvoo Charter, which was not that unusual in terms of Illinois politics. It was about like the charter that the legislature had given to cities like Springfield and other larger cities in Illinois, but it was the way the Latter-day Saints used the charter that created anti-Mormon feeling. Mm-hmm. The city court was viewed by the non-Mormons as an effort on the part of the Latter-day Saints to live above the law, and they could be tried for almost anything in their court and were usually acquitted, largely because they were innocent. Mm-hmm. But it was viewed by the non-Mormons as an attempt to circumvent the law.
What about the Legion as part of the charter? I mean, if you've got these anti-Mormon party and a lot of the sentiment going on politically, how is that viewed when they have their own militia or their own legion?
Well, that's a very good question, because Thomas Sharp was friendly to the church in the early history of Nauvoo, but he was invited to a grand celebration in Nauvoo in which the Nauvoo Legion staged a grand parade. And this bothered Thomas Sharp as he saw these men marching with their guns and a number of men in the Legion. And Parley P. Pratt even boasted that one day the Nauvoo Legion would number 50,000 individuals. Mm. And this further frightened the people in Hancock County, wondering why a city like Nauvoo had to have a legion in the first place. And so, yes, it was a factor in arousing anti-Mormon animosity.
So you have a little bit of gas being thrown on the fire with already the concerns on political things, and then you have a militia, their own army. You've got the court system. You've got the political power, and now their own army. You can see why some are starting to get a little nervous. So,
right. And furthermore, the Latter-day Saints seem to do a lot of things in a grand way in Nauvoo. There were a few Masons that were in the church at the beginning of the Nauvoo experience, and they petitioned the Grand Lodge in Quincy, Illinois, for a recess dispensation so that they could organize a Mormon Masonic lodge in Nauvoo. And this was eventually granted. And then over 1,500 Latter-day Saint males became Masons. And this was more Masons in Nauvoo than there were if you combined all of the Masons in Illinois at this period of time. Abraham Jonas, who was running for political office, came to Nauvoo and installed the lodge. Joseph Smith was made a master Mason on site. And then when the Latter-day Saints introduced the endowment or temple ceremonies, the Masons felt that some of the temple ceremonies were similar to Masonic rituals and rites, and therefore they accused Joseph Smith of introducing women into the Masonic order, which was against Masonic rules. and also disclosing Masonic ceremonies, which once again violated the oath that you took to become a Mason. And so there were these factors involved, and Brigham Young and others believed that there were Masons in the mob that took Joseph Smith's life. So Masonry played a role in causing conflict in Hancock County.
Well, let's back up for just a second. That's very, very fascinating. But I think our listeners would like to know, many of them would like to know, well, what is the relationship between Masonry? What was it in the 1840s? I mean, we have a little bit of a cursory knowledge of Masonry, but I think particularly we in the West probably don't have as much. When I served as mission president in Illinois, we had Masons around us there, and lots of even some members of the church were Masons. And so I think there's some confusion on the part of some about what is Masonry and why would Joseph be drawn to it?
Masonry is a fraternal order that became prominent in Europe in the 17th century, and then spread to the United States. It was largely, most of its membership came from individuals who were engaged in the building trade and had to travel throughout the countries of Europe, and they wanted a place where they could be safe, content in the evenings, and could identify with individuals that believed as they did and were honorable individuals. It spread to America, and there are some historians that argue it was a vehicle used in early United States history to weld the country together, that it brought fellowship and brotherhood and a sense of unity on the part of the citizens of the United States. And so many of our early founding fathers belong to the Masonic order, and part of the way you became a member is that you had to be an honorable individual. In fact, there's one student of Mormon Masonry that says that one of the greatest tributes you can make to Hiram Smith was the fact that he was honorable enough to be a Mason in the New York period of the church's history. That's evidence that he was an honorable, honest, moral individual. Well, so we have some Latter-day Saints who were Masons long before we come to Nauvoo. And then in America, following the abduction of William Morgan and his death, there was an anti-Masonic political party organized in the United States. And so you have conflict. Some individuals said that Masonry was a good thing. Some said it was a bad thing. There were even members of the church that were on both sides of the Masonic issue. W.W. Phelps had edited an anti-Masonic newspaper in New York. He was against Masonry, and then other individuals were for it. So there's nothing wrong in being a Mason. They are honorable individuals.
But it wasn't a religious organization. It was a fraternity.
Right.
And so I think that is fascinating, that as you brought up, that there was political implications and suspicions about Masonry. And so now you have Joseph Smith and others bringing in Masonry, and that just kind of begins to fuel the fire a little bit more of things that that the outsiders are suspicious of.
Right. And in actuality, there is no evidence that Joseph Smith ever initiated any woman into the Masonic order. Mm-hmm. What they were confusing is temple ceremonies where women participated freely in those, and they were confusing that with Masonry. And also he was accused of being immoral, but those accusations are not true because there were marriage ceremonies involved in that rather than immorality. And so it's all becomes a grand stew that is a simmering, and the people are believing things that aren't true, and hence it became a factor in creating the kind of scene in which Joseph Smith could be killed.
That's really fascinating. We're talking today with Dr. Kenneth Godfrey, eminent historian and longtime student of Mormon history and past president of the Mormon History Association. We're talking about some of those issues that brought about some of the conflict and contention in Hancock County in the 1840s. Well, Ken, we've talked about politics and masonry and some of the sentiment that was created with the charter and the Nauvoo Legion. What were some of the other ingredients that were put into that stew, is how you characterized it, the conflict stew? What were some of the other ingredients that caused things to simmer and come to a boil?
Well, another one of the conflicts has to do with Mormonism's success in the world, and particularly in Hancock County. Missionaries were successful in England, had been since 1837. Beginning in the early 1840s, these British converts, I think the first group that emigrated to Nauvoo numbered 4,000 in number, and so there began to be a large number of individuals that were gathering to Nauvoo, and the city was growing. This was a time when there was a general depression in Illinois, and other Illinois cities were, at least in the Hancock County area in southern Illinois, were not growing. Things were kind of flat. So you have all of this hustle and bustle in Nauvoo, the building of homes, the building of the temple. And then in order to accommodate these Latter-day Saints, there were pockets of Latter-day Saints in Montrose. They were building homes and businesses. There was a pocket of Latter-day Saints in Ramus that was a growing community. Then there was the Morley settlement to the south. And then there were 250 Latter-day Saints that Joseph Smith sent to Warren, Illinois, which is just south of Warsaw, and they were going to settle there. And so if you get a map of Hancock County, there's Nauvoo at the center, which is growing until it becomes almost as large as Chicago, or some authorities say it was even larger than Chicago at the time. Then you've got all these other communities growing around it. And if you're a non-Latter-day Saint, you're looking at this tremendous church growth with the Nauvoo Legion, with your own charter and all these things, and they became scared. They thought that Mormonism was going to take over everything. And so they began to organize what eventually became militant groups to curb the Latter-day Saints. And eventually they will come to the conclusion that they've got to expel them from the state, send them somewhere else.
Just like what was done in Missouri. We're repeating the same pattern as what had happened there.
And so Mormon growth then can be one of the factors in causing conflict in Hancock County. Another factor is lawlessness or perceived lawlessness in Nauvoo. It appeared, at least from Mormon eyes, that every crime that was committed in Hancock County was blamed on the Mormons. And there were pockets of thieves operating up and down the Mississippi River, and there may have been a few of these individuals that stopped off in Nauvoo and committed some theft and some violence along the way. And so Nauvoo got the image in the eyes of the non-Latter-day Saints that it was a sinkhole of iniquity, that there were lawbreakers that resided there and were able to walk free. And it didn't help that up in Ramus it was discovered that there were some thieves, and even a couple of members of the church's high council was involved in this, and they had been stealing some things, and they'd used the justification that Joseph Smith had taught them, that you could steal from Gentiles, non-Mormons, and the Lord didn't count that as a sin. Joseph didn't teach that, but mm-hmm. he was accused of teaching that on the part of these thieves, and so that didn't help the image. Then you have all of the extradition uh-huh. attempts on the part of the government to get Joseph Smith back in Missouri, where he could stand at trial for whatever had happened in mm-hmm. Missouri, and he was believed to be in an escape
from fugitive,
a fugitive from justice. And each time you have one of these extradition attempts, there is bad publicity that accompanies it, sometimes because he was tried in the Nauvoo court and was acquitted, and others thought that he used his own court. He was the mayor by this time. Mm-hmm. He was a judge on the court. He used his own court to acquit himself. And so that didn't set very well with the non-Mormon populace. They believed that he was acting like a dictator or a king, and was above the law in their eyes, and that made a contribution to non-Mormon conflict in the
county. Can see how all of these things come together and cause this percolating of the anti-Mormon stew a little bit. You've identified many of those significant issues and factors. What were some of the others that caused this little percolating stew to really come to a full boil?
Well, another one of the factors was dissension within the church on the part of members of the church. When Joseph Smith introduces plural marriage in Nauvoo, there were some individuals in the church that did not approve of plural marriage, and also they what is a more important factor is they did not approve of the way that Joseph Smith and other church leaders were taking care of the financial mm-hmm. aspects of Nauvoo's history with the sale of land, because they had to pay in a sense, because of the interest attached to the purchase of land when they settled Nauvoo in 1839, the city council passed a law that until the land in lower Nauvoo was sold so that debts could be paid, they didn't want you buying and selling land in upper Nauvoo or to the east of the city. Well, there was William and Wilson Law, who were brothers. They had come from Canada, were members of the church. In fact, William Law even served in the first presidency of the church, and they felt like that this was a curb on their freedom and their American rights to do what they wanted to do with their land. The laws also were against plural marriage, and so they worked together with the Fosters and the Higbees, who were brothers, and with some others, and organized their own church and came out against Joseph Smith, and they were factors in setting the climate that eventually leads to Joseph Smith's martyrdom. Also, in March of 1844, Joseph Smith organizes what is known as the Council of 50. According to a Latter-day Saint theology, there is going to come a time in the world's history when Christ will return to the earth as King of Kings and Lord of Lords and will usher in his millennial reign. Joseph Smith, some scholars believed that not only did you have to have a church ready and functioning to greet the Savior when he comes, you also had to have a political organization intact so that there would be a vehicle through which the political decisions could be made on behalf of the peoples of the United States. And so Joseph Smith organizes the Council of 50, which he seems to have believed was the political mm-hmm. arm of the church. The Council of 50 was made up of not only Latter-day Saints, but was made up of non-Latter-day Saints as well, although they were few in number, mm-hmm. the non-Latter-day Saints. And word got out and circulated throughout the county that Joseph Smith was organizing a government within a government in the United States, and some felt that that was treasonous and something that should not be done. And so that was also a factor that led to his martyrdom and eventually to the expulsion of Latter-day Saints from Illinois.
So what did the Council of 50 do? Was it just the organization that caused the outsiders and some from inside that were apostatizing? Was it just the knowledge that there was going to be something, or was there actually something that was done that fanned the flames, if you will?
Well, they met together, and there seemed to be a feeling already starting to sprout that the Latter-day Saints were not going to be able to stay in Illinois much longer, that they were going to have to settle somewhere else if they wanted a measure of peace. And so that there were members of the Council of 50 that were sent to Texas, and which was an independent country at this period of time, and were asked how they would feel if Latter-day Saints settled in mm-hmm. Texas. One man was sent as a representative of the Council of 50 to Russia. There were some that started to explore the American West as possible places for settlement. And so it did have some activity in along those lines, but there wasn't enough time for it to mature in Joseph Smith's lifetime. And so basically they had meetings, kept minutes, and made some plans, but not a lot mm-hmm. was done in
so,
this period.
So just the idea that they were having their the prospects of having their own government, civil government, caused others to feel like that they were not loyal to the United States and the Constitution. And so you have all these factors coming together that's causing the non-Mormons or those that were disaffecting from Mormonism to feel like that they were abandoning the constitutional government of the United States.
Right. They were accusing Joseph Smith as acting more of a dictator than a mm-hmm. than a man who was living within a democracy. And so maybe these causes we have discussed, maybe there isn't one of them that is the total cause of the problem.
You see that.
You have to get the whole mix, and then you are able to see that there's a certain amount of fear among the non-Mormon populace in Hancock County. There is, and part of this is because of the growing numbers of Latter-day Saints, and it allowed normally good men with sound morals to engage in activities that they would not have engaged in otherwise. And then also in this mix, and I think you've discussed this earlier in these programs, some Mormon doctrines were believed to be a little strange mm-hmm. to non-members of the church. Latter-day Saint perfectionism that eventually with the help of Christ and others, you could become perfect individuals or very similar to your Father in heaven. And the gathering continued, mm-hmm. large numbers, gathering to Mormon headquarters, and the fact that Latter-day Saints believed Joseph Smith was a prophet, mm-hmm. seer and revelator, and some thought that meant they would do anything that he asked, even if he asked them to do things that were not proper, and that seemed to go against some individuals' ideals of what really good Americans should be.
You can see how all becomes kind of a perfect storm of all of the factors coming together, the theological suspicions, the political suspicions, You have those from within Nauvoo, like you mentioned, the Wilson or the William and Wilson Law and the Higbees and Fosters that then fan the flames of the non-Mormons when they disaffect. And so it's a very, very interesting period of time. We're so grateful for you, Ken, to share with us some of those critical factors that played such a significant role in the conflict in Hancock County that are going to lead up to eventually the martyrdom of the Prophet Joseph Smith. Thank you so much for joining us today on Past Impressions.
Thank you very much.
We invite you to listen to new episodes of Past Impressions on Tuesday mornings at 11 o'clock. I'm Brent Topp, your host, and invite you to join us in future episodes of Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.